Hello, welcome to Tales from the Potting Bench. I'm Adam, a gardener, writer, and podcaster with a passion for hearing people's stories and sharing them with you. Before we get into this week's episode, I'd like to ask, if you listen to this podcast and enjoy it, then please consider rating and leaving a review on your podcast platform of choice. It's easy to do, takes a few minutes of your time, but it helps this podcast get into the ears of more like-minded, planty people. I'm thrilled to say that this podcast continues to be sponsored by the wonderful people at PlantGrow, producers of award-winning organic compost, mulch, and fertiliser made with zero chemicals. Great for your garden, and even greater for the planet. And I know, because it's all I use on my own garden. Don't forget, if you use the code POTTINGBENCH on plantgrow.co.uk, you'll get 10% off your whole order. We're now in the sixth season of the podcast, and this time we're doing things slightly differently, as over the course of the coming weeks we'll be hearing from some of the most interesting women across the UK as I bring them together in what I'm calling a celebration of women and plants. I am constantly inspired by the women around me in the garden world, and it's high time that we're able to bring them together and share their passion with them. So, let's introduce my next guest. Throughout this season, I've spoken to and will speak to many people who started their working life without even a thought given to plants from the start. However, they have found gardening and the joy of plants slightly later in life, and as a secondary career, and my guest this week did exactly that. Lucy Hutchings, otherwise known as She Grows Veg on social media, is known both for her beautiful Instagram page and also now her heritage seed company. In this episode, we discuss how Lucy and Monty aren't all that dissimilar, why she loves veg so much, and much more. We also do a bit of a deep dive into social media too, which lots of you will find quite interesting. Enjoy. So, for anyone listening who is not familiar with you right now, who are you and what do you do?
My name is Lucy Hutchings, but basically no one calls me that. Everyone just calls me She Grows Veg, which is fine. I'm used to it because that's what I'm known as on social media and particularly on Instagram. So I've been sharing my heirloom growing journey for many years on Instagram and now have started an heirloom seed company inspired by what I do on social media.
So what do, this none of this was your original kind of path in life. That sounds so grand, doesn't it? But I suppose there's an element of what you used to do has kind of come through in a lot of what you actually do in terms of the visuals of it. I'm not going to spoil it. I'll let you tell us what were you before you were an heirloom seed purveyor?
So I did have, this is my second career. My first career was very, very different. In fact, the only other person I know in horticulture that has the similar career path to me is Monty Don.
I was going to say that.
Following in good footsteps. So I used to work in the fashion industry and I had an eponymous couture jewellery label. So I used to make quite out there, very large, very statement jewellery for fashion shoots and big glossy magazines. And I used to do like Kylie Minogue's jewellery for TV and stage and Cheryl Cole's jewellery. She's probably not even called that anymore, but she was when I worked in that. That's how long it's been. So really long time ago now. It feels like a whole different life ago and a wildly different life. So I did it for about 10 years and I did some of the most amazing things, all these things that, you know, I explain it to people and they think, oh my God, that's like a dream career. What are you doing in the garden? and it does, it sounds amazing. And I did get to work, you know, with some amazing people and on some amazing projects, but it is a very different industry. And I think probably for a girl that kind of grew up climbing trees in the Suffolk countryside, it maybe wasn't the best fit. Or I wasn't the best fit. And it was very stressful running my own business, which is an ironic thing to say because I've just launched a massive business, but in a very different way. But it was, I kind of reached this turning point in the business where it had grown to a point where I was either going to have to bring in investors in order to be able to keep affording to make the jewellery, because it's very expensive to make jewellery. Or I wasn't going to be able to do it anymore. So it kind of gave me one of those rare points where you kind of stop and take stock of what's going on. And I just realized I wasn't enjoying it. I wasn't happy. I'd gone into it because I'm a creative. I went to art school and I love to create beautiful things. That's what I'm really passionate about. And that's why I had done what I'd done. And I found I was spending all my time kind of running a very complicated and not terribly profitable business. Mm. And none of my time really getting to be that creative. So I made the rather drastic decision to walk away. And there was a gap. So it wasn't like straight from fashion into horticulture. Yeah. But all through the time that I'd worked in fashion and when I was at art school and even before that when I was a kid and things, I loved growing plants that you could eat. I didn't have any interest in anything that wasn't edible, like no house plants, no flowers for the sake of flowers. But if you could eat it in some way, whether it was a herb or, you know, even if it was just useful and medicinal or something, I found it really inspiring to grow. Didn't know what I was doing, did not approach it with any level of skill, I would say, and with very mixed results. I think my ambition outweighed my skill quite a lot of the time, but it just made me happy. And I think that a lot of people in gardening, or whether they're in it as a hobby or whether they're in it as a career, that's how they feel about it. We love it. We do it because we love it. So I was going through a bit of a stressful period, as we all do sometimes, end of 2017. And I wanted something that was completely removed from the whole situation that I could just, you know, plow my full attention into and would be completely removed from the whole situation. And so it was to the gardening and the food growing that I turned, but I'm kind of probably not surprising to hear, I'm kind of not a half measures kind of person. It wasn't like, oh, I'll get a container bed and grow some carrots.
Yeah, you'll be happy with a couple of pots. It's not going to happen, is it?
Changed in the whole garden. The entire thing's going to be edible. And I started deep diving into like forgotten edibles and heirloom varieties, because that was my interest right from the beginning. That just really interesting take on food, edible crop type things. And yeah, I very quickly realized I just loved it. Because I started sharing that journey on Instagram at the same time. So the two happened at the same time, this kind of moment when I was like, right, let's do this gardening. I love it. And the Instagram account, because it was actually my sister who said, you know, you should join Instagram. There's this amazing gardening community and everyone like shares ideas and shares concepts and, you know, what they're trying. And it's like a kind of younger crowd, because I think, you know, gardening is gradually changing, but it's still kind of geared towards, let's say, an older audience. Mm. So I was seeking more like-minded people who were maybe like breaking the rules a bit and weren't getting all their information from gardening books, you know, in the traditional sense, and were willing to kind of try stuff out and see if it failed or if it worked. And so that's why I joined Instagram. Did not have any agenda whatsoever, did not expect it to go in the way it went. But yeah, that's kind of what started me on the road that I am now firmly following.
So that was 2017 then, when you joined Instagram?
It was right at the beginning of 2018.
Right, okay. Because I think that there's this funny thing, isn't there, with Instagram, in that there's almost kind of two. There are multiple generations, but there are almost two generations of Insta gardeners, aren't there? Where you kind of the ones that are like the original the ones. Well, that's the difference. Were you pre-reels? Or were you?
I was pre-reels. Yeah. I like taking photographs. Like I can take a really nice photograph of vegetables. Yeah. Like that's what I love doing, and I like growing them and photographing them, and basically kind of build a business off the back of being able to really take a really nice photograph of a veggie. Yeah. And then reels came along and photographs started working. I was like, what is this? What am I doing with this?
Did you adapt to them pretty quick though?
I think by that time, the Instagram account was already so much part of my career. I made a very conscious decision early on. I was, should we say, a reluctant influencer. I felt on one hand incredibly privileged that so many people were really interested in what I was doing and wanted to follow along with my journey, and that is amazing. And on you know, on that hand, it has allowed me to build a career in horticulture. So I'm incredibly grateful to my roots in social media. But on the other hand, I'm in my 40s and I'm on social media and I'm constantly, I think we all feel, just maybe we're just a little bit out of our depth.
Yeah, slightly.
I'm not entirely comfortable with the whole concept of an influencer. Like, I don't like to refer to myself as that, but when you say, oh, I'm a content creator, most people go, what?
Yeah. So, yeah. I'm of that camp as well. If anyone asks me, I won't say influencer, because I think there's also none of this is specifically to do with you, but for anyone that's really into Instagram is going to enjoy this part. But I think the element of influencer, I think, to me anyway, and I think to probably some other people, just kind of conjures a particular image of, I don't know, it's kind of like, this sounds bad, but I always think of it as kind of like people that are really into like makeup and hair, because that's where some of the influencer things I think kind of started, those kind of accounts. But I also think that the word influencer takes away from the skill that you have to have with, and content creation and content creator gives you back some of that. No, actually, I'm creating something and I'm really, because it's such a skill. And like you say, reels are a skill, but taking a great photo of some beautiful veg, that's not something that kind of, I mean, anybody can take photos, but it's a real skill to photograph well, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And you know, it's, that was my skill, and then I kind of lost the ability to share it for a while. But because I'd kind of always had that slightly uncomfortable feeling about the whole social media thing, and also it felt like you watch all these new platforms launch, and you know, TikTok launched during that time, and it's like, oh God, there's another one, and we know we all ought to be on it and things, but you kind of get comfortable with what you're doing, and it all moves along so fast that I didn't want a career that was going to be 100% reliant on that social media platform, because just in case, you know, it can all go horribly wrong. And I didn't want my career as well to be reliant on an algorithm, because anyone that is on social media at all or on Instagram will know that you are a slave to the algorithm, and it just does what it wants, and there's nothing you can do about it. And it's incredibly frustrating, because I think a lot of people, especially as you're trying to build, and you're putting all the effort in and you're doing all the things that, you know, everyone says is the right thing to do, and it can be quite demotivating, because it doesn't matter what you do, it feels like it's just an uphill battle and you can't win. And it's not you.
No.
it's just an algorithm that wants what it wants. And so I didn't want that to be the full focus of what I was doing. So I very consciously, like, I retrained in horticulture. I did a diploma in horticulture, and I retrained my design skills in garden design, thinking that was probably the way it was going to take me. And I've kind of taken every tangible in real life opportunity that I could across the whole period that I've been doing this, not entirely sure where it was going to take me or what it was going to end up being, but knowing that it was going to become some sort of career fully formed. And just trying to do as much stuff in real life as possible, rather than relying on things like paid promotions and stuff, which I don't think people really like seeing.
No, it's funny, isn't it? And we'll talk more about She Grows Veg, but I think this is so interesting, because I don't think we, as whether we want to be called influencers or not, or content creators, as whatever we are to whoever we are, as those people, we don't tend to talk about this that much. And I think it's quite interesting when we do, and we kind of share some of the insights on it, because I think you're so right. And what you've said there about the element of not just being a slave to that algorithm is so true. And we both see this, I'm sure, all the time, but I see people that kind of come onto Instagram. I feel like I'm saying this as like some sort of elder Instagrammer now, but I've been on there 4 years, which is long enough to have seen something's changed, you know.
In Instagram terms, we're old school.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you're slightly ahead of me, but even in that time, I've kind of seen some people come onto Instagram that are doing really brilliant things, and then I'm suddenly aware that they're not perhaps on TikTok or on Twitter or on whatever, or doing anything kind of outside of Instagram. And the real problem with, like you say about the algorithm, and that applies to any of the platforms, or even if you're just doing
one thing outside of social media, is that that thing can be taken away from you. So like Instagram, if it shut tomorrow, so many people are suddenly without their name, their platform, like their whatever. So it's so wise to do what you've definitely done. I know you wanted to do that anyway, but to do what you've done in the real world, quote unquote real world, because if heaven forbid that were to happen, you've still got your really successful website, you've got the name that you've built up and all of the stuff that you're doing outside of it, which you've almost built a it's a really recognizable name and brand, and that's, you've done so well in such a relatively short period of time, haven't you? I think you'd kind of got to the end of your jewelry kind of career, and that was perhaps, you know, something that you didn't want to carry on with. I'm guessing that there's none of that with any of this, and you're thoroughly enjoying it.
I'm loving it, and I really find now, particularly right now, this is where it's all led to. Like, this is like the culmination of all those years of work and all those, you know, saying yes to everything and trying it and failing sometimes, and but all the work that I've put in, because it was quite a conscious decision, and it was partly about building a brand, but it was more about just making sure that I built respect with the industry, because I did find another kind of slight downside is that on one hand, from a marketing perspective, everyone wants, like, you know, this Instagram crowd and social media crowd to you know, work with products and come to events and things. So you get a lot of attention on one hand, but you're not necessarily respected that much. So I think new media, social media, and people that within the horticulture industry, because there is such a legacy of traditional media types and print and things, the new media types can be looked down on quite a lot, and it's harder to build respect. So I knew that I wanted a career in this industry, and I had spent a lot of time across the globe trying to build respect, you know, for what I do, and that I am actually good at what I do, and that I do actually know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. Let's backtrack. Were you She Grows Veg right from the very start? Was that the, so where did the, I mean, that seems like an obvious name now, but where did that initial, did you come up with that name?
It was the same conversation with my sister, where she was like, right, let's get you on Instagram, you know, you need to talk to other people, have communication with people, and meet some like younger minded gardeners. So let's get you on social media. You're going to love it. You know, you can take a good photo, so you'll be great. And then it just led on to, okay, so what shall I be called? Oh, she actually works in marketing. So she does, she works in the charity sector and does copywriting and stuff. So this is totally her.
Yeah.
Took me through like a whole process of brainstorming for names, and She Grows Veg is what came out of it. I think it just worked. As soon as it came up, we're like, oh yeah,
I think it's great. It's such a recognizable kind of name, and I think it's also brilliant. Now, we haven't even mentioned this, and I'm aware I haven't even mentioned this in any of the episodes I've recorded yet, but in this season I'm doing I'm focusing on women in horticulture, but I think also that is just the She Grows Veg thing is such a brilliant thing for bringing more women into growing and understanding seeds and everything. I think that now, obviously you didn't know any of this was going to happen at that time, but it's such a great name to have now, isn't it?
Lovely looking back at the origin, kind of the origin story. Marvel superhero. <Yeah. laughs> the origins of that name and where it came from, like, I was going through a horrible divorce and I needed something to distract me, and like it was like, you know, there are so many women across the globe in the same position that I was in, and you know, sitting down with a sister or a friend or something and just making a change and doing something positive, and it has grown so organically, pardon the pun, but it has, into something that is now a female-founded business that employs exclusively women. We're not, by the way, like, it's not like a rule, it just happened that way.
Yeah, of course.
But, you know, we're rolling with it because women rock, and we're
really
good. And, you know, I think my following and our customer base and stuff is 70% women, and I think it's just, it's not about the exclusion of men or, like, fighting the patriarchy or anything. But actually, in the industry that we're working in, it can be quite male. And, you know, the seed industry can be quite male. Like, a lot of the seed brands sound quite male.
Well, I'm not going to mention names, but there's, I think you're right. And I'm sure none of that was necessarily conscious at the time. Like, Mr. Fothergill's and, like, Johnson's, there's something about those brilliant brands, but there's just something, they're obviously built on their founders' names or whatever. And I think you're so right. And I think that's what, you know, there are a couple of other kind of brands out there trying to do something for kind of women in gardening. I think intrinsically it is, I say this mildly ironically as a man, but it's such a not a male dominated world, but a lot of the brand names and the branding is very clearly either purposely done to attract men, or I don't know where I'd love to understand that a bit more, because there is something in that.
Because a lot of the British horticulture brands are very old, you know, there's a lot of history there, which is a wonderful thing. You've got a lot of real heritage brands there, but back in the day they were run by men, you know, they weren't run by women. Things have changed so much, you know, even in the last few years, things have progressed so much, which is wonderful, and it's how it should be. But, you know, these brands have been around for some of them hundreds of years, and they were run by men, and they were founded by men. So they naturally just, that's kind of where they've grown out of. And although, you know, we all buy into them now, I think it's not that we're like the only company that's doing this, but it is nice to just really reference and celebrate the fact that we are women. We're doing it, and we grow veg, we grow it all.
Yeah.
And there's loads of us out there. So it does feel really nice looking back at that first conversation about what should I be called on Instagram? And it was just me. And it's grown gradually into something that's so much more than just me. Yeah. And I think that's really lovely. I really love it. It makes me happy.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. Do you know what, we've kind of mentioned it. We kind of have mentioned it in terms of your Instagram and the fact that there are seeds, but we haven't really talked about what She Grows Veg actually is, because whilst yes, it is the Instagram account, but obviously now the seeds that you're selling through the She Grows Veg name. What is that for anyone who just hasn't seen that side of everything with the seeds? How would you explain what that is exactly?
Well, it's quite a recent journey, actually. So all through the history of the Instagram account, I've grown these unusual, rare, heritage, heirloom varieties. And that, you know, I've been kind of a collector of seeds. It's been something that I love, and I've, you know, collaborated with different growers and farmers and stuff and other collectors all over the world, and built this amazing collection of things, and shared the growing of those and the resulting harvests online, to which I then get hundreds of messages going, oh, this is amazing, where can I get some? I'm like, oh, you can't. It doesn't exist in this country. So it's been a long journey in that I've wanted to do this for years, because I knew that there was an appetite for open pollinated seed, you know, non-hybrid seed. And in this country, we are really heavily marketed hybrid seed, F1s.
F1s, yeah.
You go to the garden center, and that is the vast majority of the seed that you're going to find on the shelf. And I know that I have no interest in growing that. And there's this ever-growing population of people who wanting something else, something that was open pollinated, something that pollinated, you know, and reproduced in a more natural way and didn't come across as a man-made product, and that kind of thing. So I started by having conversations with other seed companies and going, you know, there's this whole market out there and no one's really tapping it. Like, there's a few varieties, but there's not a lot. And and the answer I came up against again and again from all different directions was that there is no appetite for open pollinated seed in this country. People want the reliability of hybrid varieties. It's like, well, that really doesn't line up with the conversations that I'm having again and again and again with people. So that was the start of it. And then I knew that there was this gap. It's not that you can't get open pollinated seed, but because of the regulations, it's way more complicated to add new varieties and things, but it's not impossible. You can do it, and you can work with DEFRA to make new varieties available. So I've been looking for a way to do this for a while, knowing that, you know, seed is, I love growing food, but seed and growing unusual varieties and discovering new varieties and things, that is like the absolute best. Mm. For me, it makes me happier than anything else. So this, it's kind of, everything's been channeling to this point. So I knew I wanted to do it, but it was just too much to do on my own.
Sure.
And at the same time, I've been working with a US seed company for a number of years now that quite a lot of people are familiar with through social media, called Baker Creek, who are exclusively heirloom seed company in the US. And again, you can't, like, it's very difficult to understand exactly what the import regulations are. So people have been reticent about buying seed from them, and it's unclear as to whether you can. Now, I've been doing photography with them for a while and literally learning from the best about heirloom varieties and seeds and a different way to run a seed company. And I'm very lucky to have their mentorship still, and they are still supporting us in what we're doing. So we're very, very lucky. But then I kind of reconnected with an old friend, and it all came out of Gardeners World Live. So last year I did a show garden at Gardeners World Live, a fully edible one, obviously.
You did, yeah. Brilliant. It was too, yeah.
That didn't look like a veg garden. And it was kind of in the run-up to that show, Kate, a friend of mine, messaged me again. Now, we'd studied together at Beth Chatto on the garden design course there, and then she'd gone off into the city and done kind of this big corporate marketing job. And she, you know, we'd stayed in touch, but you know how it is when you're no longer
you've
a child.
You've all got lives, and
messages each other constantly. You just, you know, life gets in the way. So we'd kind of drifted apart, and she reconnected and said, like, I've seen what you're doing on, if you need any help with garden or anything, I'd love to take a few days and kind of help you out. And, you know, not particularly enjoying the city life and stuff. So I said, do you know what? Let's go for a coffee. And over the course of that coffee, the conversation went from helping with the show garden to, oh, there's so much more that this could be. And she's just got a brilliant business brain, and she's, her whole background is in marketing and brand building and things, and she totally saw what I could see, but from her side of things, and she brings to the table all the skill set that I don't necessarily have. So I've got like the creative veg obsessed brain, and I'm always having crazy ideas quite a lot of which we do, by the way. And she's brilliant at structuring it and making it like a proper grown-up business that works
and functions,
tangible. And, you know, so we make a really formidable team. So, and out of that, we have launched an heirloom seed company called She Grows Veg, obviously inspired by the name of my social media presence. And it is entirely open pollinated seed. So we are calling it the heirloom seed company, because it's all seed that either has a story or a history, or is, you know, the best culinary seed you can possibly get. Because one thing that we really believe is that edible plants are beautiful. So you always have, you know, this excitement around ornamental plants, and they're quite aspirational, and, you know, like a large portion of flower shows and things are devoted to just purely ornamental plants. And then you have like a grow your own section, which is quite humble and
it's the additional part of the show, isn't it? It's not the,
and
the
it's feature. A very different vibe that's kind of quite down to earth and rootsy, and, you know, which is nice, but it's not something that resonates with everyone. So we wanted to kind of elevate edible plants up to the level of ornamental plants, because these plants are beautiful, but we've stopped seeing the plant and we just see the food. So we want to get people to see that actually having an edible garden can be a really, really beautiful garden. So they are the most beautiful varieties, but they are also the best to eat.
Yeah.
The other part of what we're trying to do is show that buying seeds is like buying ingredients. And there's this strange disconnect. Obviously, we know that if you buy vegetable seed and you plant it, you're going to end up with some food. But there's not really a connection to the food.
Yeah.
So these are kind of aimed at gardeners that like growing veg. And then if you're a chef or you're a cook and you're really into ingredients, you buy them from a shop or a supplier. So you want to just bring those two together and say, if you are really passionate about working in your kitchen with the best ingredients possible, the only way you're really going to be able to do that is to grow them yourself.
Why? I mean, so when you go through all of that, it's so ambitious, but also is working, isn't it? You know, and I think people are, like you say, there's an element of all of this is kind of rootsy, and that's fine. But that, I think, what you're then trying to do in terms of, you know, this is actually fundamentally, these are great fruit, great fruits in some cases, and some foods in some cases, other cases, but ornamentally also look fantastic as well. And I think there is a disconnect there, definitely, with a, and I think it doesn't help with allotments. You see some really gorgeous allotments, really, really gorgeous allotments. But I think there is certainly an element of, well, my garden is for all the sexy plants and my allotment is all for all the functional stuff. So it's kind of like form and function. But I think why can't you bring those together and have them all in one place? You know, and that is one thing that you're getting from a gorgeous vegetable plant is, yes, you're getting the food at the end of it and you're seeing the ingredients from it, but also, no, it actually looks pretty good as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what we're trying to get across to people. And I think it's never been more important for people to see that, because space is a real premium. You know, gardens are getting smaller and smaller. Some people don't even have access to a garden. They might have a balcony, they might only have a windowsill. But does that mean that they can't have a beautiful space and a really productive one? No, it doesn't. And it doesn't mean that you should have to choose either. So we want to show people that you can have an absolutely gorgeous outside space, whatever that may be, and you can eat it as well.
Yeah, I think it's great. I've got some seeds. I'm annoyingly, they're in the shed and I can't remember what varieties I ordered, but mainly tomatoes, because my God, I could have ordered every single variety of tomatoes because they're all, they just look, heirloom tomatoes look amazing, don't they? And it's just when you get the ones that are all like veiny, and there's the one that I have ordered, and I'm really annoyed that I haven't got it in front of me, but it's black, but it's got kind of thin grey, green, like veining. I can't remember which one it is, but it's gorgeous.
Is it gunmetal grey?
Possibly, yeah. And I also think, oh, what was the other one I ordered? I should have been prepared, shouldn't I, with this? But anyway, I could have ordered all of them because I just think they look so great. And there's something about, particularly tomatoes, because I love tomatoes, there's something fantastic about having such a variety of colour and just how they all look different. And I think nothing beats it is when you've either made just a really simple salad or like a bruschetta or something like that with so many different tomatoes, and how incredible that looks. And this is where you get back to this kind of fusion of eating with your mouth, but also eating with your eyes as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think maybe that's where, you know, my background in fashion and design has contributed to this. So, you know, every part of what we've put together with the seeds, from the actual seeds, the plants that will grow from the seeds, all the way through to the packaging, the website and everything, is gorgeous. It's beautiful. And it's that takes you on the journey right from the beginning. And I don't think there's anything wrong in things being beautiful. You know, I think we can get too preoccupied with things being efficient and, you know, it has to be productive and you have to grow all your veg in rows and you have to maximize your space, which is great. But, you know, it's okay for also you want things to look really nice. One of the things that irritates me most is like my kind of constant personal battle is this idea that colored vegetables are a novelty.
Right. Yeah.
That is often how they are put forward. And actually, a lot of the time, that is the colour that they're supposed to be.
Yeah.
Carrots are not supposed to be orange.
No.
We made them orange. They were selectively bred for years in, you know, in tribute to the Dutch royal family, so that they could be orange for William of Orange. That is why carrots are orange.
Are they purple?
Purple, white, basically any other colour than orange is the natural colour of carrots. So white, yellow, red, purple, black, anything that. That's the colour that carrots are supposed to be. And likewise, red round tomatoes is very much our decision of what a tomato should look like.
Yeah.
When actually tomatoes come in every shape, size, colour, pattern, as you were saying. And I think once you kind of take the supermarket blinkers off, because we are so used to seeing the veg in the supermarket aisle. And actually, that is a really carefully curated range of what a buyer has decided you want. But within each category, the selection is really, really small. Like, you're going to get like a couple of different types of lettuce, and they're always going to be the same ones. Doesn't matter where you go. You're going to get red round tomatoes. You get small ones, you get big ones, but they'll be red and round. That's it. If you're really willing to pay a lot of money, you might get some yellow pears. Everything is so standardized, and that's what we've got, kind of been programmed. That's what the vegetables that we grow have to look like. And I now find if you go in at most aisles in the seed aisles in garden centers, you get the same stuff. So you get a wider selection. You get a lot of more different types of cabbages and carrots and things like that, but the vast majority of the carrots are going to be orange, the vast majority of the tomatoes is going to be red and round. It really reflects our expectation of what these vegetables should look like. And that's kind of what we've been trained to look for by supermarkets. And actually, there are a myriad of much more interesting and much more delicious options out there. And that's what we're trying to bring to people and give them the opportunity to really, really branch out. So we're trying to kind of move past that, like, oh, it's a purple carrot, let's try that, it's exciting. Yeah. And actually, you know what? That is way higher in antioxidants, so it's better for you, and it's going to taste better, and it's probably going to grow better for you as well.
Yeah.
But I think that the response so far, so we've actually only been trading for a few months, so this is really brand new. but the response from people has been amazing, and it does feel like people have gone, this is fine, this is what we wanted. And
right.
You know, I think we're very excited by the response from the public and from the industry, which has been lovely.
Yeah, I think it's been brilliant. And I saw you only briefly, because every time I walked past you at the Garden Press event, you were absolutely rammed, and I didn't even get a chance to talk to you because it was so busy every time I went past. But
I know.
You and poor Kate were squashed in there. But do you know what was really nice about that side of the? I don't know if you noticed this, but I kind of had a conscious moment where I thought, because you were right opposite Feverfew, the gloves as well, and I thought there was like, this definitely wasn't conscious by the organisers, but there was like a little pocket of women-led businesses in that corner, and it was so nice to have that all together. But I'm sure it wasn't conscious, but did you notice that at all?
Yeah, we were all down in one corner at the end. It'd be nice if we were up the other end,
right in the middle. Yeah
You know, work in progress.
Yeah, exactly. I'm so glad that it's going really, really well, and it's just been nice because I've followed you since I started on Instagram, and you're already a few years in then, but I think it's been so nice to just see that. Yeah, there is a pun and I can't excuse it, but organically kind of grow with Instagram, with the business. And it's all felt like, you know, you've consciously done it, but it's felt like it has just been a natural progression of the brand and stuff. And I think I can't wait to see what you're doing this year. I mean, I know you're going to be at Chelsea in the Pavilion, aren't you?
Yeah. So that's kind of our big, we're still pinching ourselves a little bit about that one, to be honest, because, the RHS has been amazingly supportive. And you know, when you launch a business and you have all these high hopes and you have all these expectations, you know what you want it to be, it's just getting it there. And so we thought, let's try for Chelsea. But knowing that, you know, it's so hard to get into, and it's so competitive, and there's so many, you know, businesses that have been around for so much longer than we have, and the RHS just was so supportive of what we were trying to do. They really got our message. And when we talked them through our ideas for the display, they loved it. And I think they particularly liked it as well, because it is Grow Your Own themed, obviously, but in a very different way to how it's been presented at an RHS show before. But we're also strongly referencing our roots in social media and this huge growing audience of gardeners that there is there. And that's where they're learning, and that's where they're knowledge sharing. And that's kind of, it's kind of like a big global gardening club. And so we, you know, we're really proud of having grown out of that. And so we are fully referencing that on our stand, which is very exciting.
Very exciting. I can't wait to see it. Are you able to reveal anything about it at all?
I am, yeah. So like I said, we wanted to show food and vegetables and fruit in a way that it hasn't been really exhibited at an RHS show before. And we have this mission of really making that connection with the food aspect of it. And also showing how beautiful these plants are. So we've taken inspiration for the stand from Renaissance old masters paintings, you know, where they had, you know, vegetables and wine glasses and things cascading over a table. And it was very simple still life, but they were very, very good at taking the humble veg and making it something incredibly beautiful. So we've taken inspiration from that. And we're doing that kind of still life arrangement, but a very modern take on it. So, you know, much cleaner, much more modern, grouped in colours. Obviously, we have a lot of colour to work with in our range. And we're working with an amazing florist called Hazel Gardner on that, because it's quite a lot of floristry skills involved in making those vegetables last all week at Chelsea.
Yeah, I can imagine.
And then just to kind of drive the point home that it, you know, to get people to see these plants almost like art. Everything will be displayed, each arrangement will be displayed in freestanding gilt frames, antique gilt frames. So we've got, I think, 9 wow. frames across the stand. So it's almost like a real life recreation of those still lives, but with a modern twist. Wow. So that's the stand. And then, like I said, we're really referencing our roots from social media. So we've got this giant frame, which will also be decorated with vegetables and things. And we have another amazing florist from social media called Sophie Powell, who is UFLO London, as in right. unidentified floral object.
<Love that. laughs>
Who is known on social media for making these amazing headdresses. And she is making us some out of vegetables.
No
so you can come into the frame and try on a headdress and have a photograph and be part of the art.
Oh,
so
brilliant.
We are making the ultimate kind of selfie opportunity on our stand. So that's the plan. And then we're very, very excited.
And then, what do you mean, and then? Is that not it? You keep saying and then. I'm like, no. How big is this stand?
And then. Having a very and then kind of a life at the moment.
Yeah.
Quite overwhelming, but very, very exciting. So we were really, really lucky that this mission that we have about ingredients and connecting people with the plant and the food that it's going to produce, and that's the best way to get ingredients, totally lines up with Raymond Blanc's mission in life and what he's trying to do at Le Manoir. So Raymond is coming on press day to cook on our stand with our vegetables, and is creating a special recipe that we'll be able to share with people, and people will be able to buy the seeds in order to grow the plants for the recipe that will be presented on the day.
That's going to be a real treat. That's on press day.
That's on press day, yeah.
I best get a press pass then.
Obviously, yeah, you're going to get that accreditation. But we'll be sharing the whole thing through video as well, so that no one misses out on that.
Amazing. Well, I mean, that's going to be an event. That's not a stand in the pavilion. That's an event, isn't it? It's going to be fantastic.
Yeah, we're very excited. He's growing some of our varieties at Le Manoir, so it's kind of a bigger collaboration, just because I think our two missions line up so precisely with and he, you know, he's a firm believer in heritage and heirloom varieties and growing organically, and it's just fully in line with what we are passionate about as well.
Brilliant. Wow. I mean, what a busy year you've got ahead then.
And then it's Hampton as well.
Yeah, well, we'll have to get you back on before Hampton. Good Lord. So for anyone, I mean, we've mentioned She Grows Veg obviously throughout that, but for anyone that hasn't either seen your Instagram or seen the website, where can they find those?
So we are on all the major social networks apart from X or Twitter or whatever it is. Just can't keep up with its name. No. So other than that, we're She Grows Veg on everything. That's where you'll find us. Primarily, we're most active on Instagram, so that's probably the best place to tune in. And then you should check out the website, which is shegrowsveg.com. It's all She Grows Veg.
Oh, nice. What would you have done if you'd have gone to register that website and it wasn't available?
I bought that one early on.
Good. Yeah. You pre-planned. Brilliant. Okay. Well, for anyone that isn't following along, then I highly recommend doing so, definitely on Instagram. And please do check out the seeds, because I, as soon as they went on, I went on and treated myself to some. I've got some tomatoes, but also, oh, I can't remember what else I've got. I've got a couple of chilies as well, I think. And I've started the chilies off. The chilies are growing really well. I need to start my tomatoes off. I need to get going.
It's hard to keep up. There's so much stuff to
But this is the thing, isn't it? We all kind of yearn for this time where we can sow seeds, and then when it's the time to, none of us have got any energy to. But I will. That's me being a poor gardener. But anyway, right, it's got to that point where I've got three questions for you now. Three questions that I'm asking every guest, and there's a bit of a twist this series. So the first question is from me, second question is from the previous guest, and then the third question is a bit of a surprise, so we'll get to that in a minute. So are you ready?
As I'll ever be.
Okay. Question number one is, what is one plant that you always struggle to grow and just cannot get along with?
Well, do you know what? I'm going to go with a whole section of plants. It's brassicas in general.
Okay.
And it's such a big part of food growing as well, because it's pretty much what you're going to be eating in winter.
Yeah.
But I just, that they are, that everything wants to eat them. Everything. Bugs, birds, rabbits, mice, everything wants to eat them. And then, you know, the second they get too dry or too hot or anything, they bolt. So I think they are often talked about as being really basic, straightforward things to grow. And I don't think they are at all. Like, I've just given up growing them in the summer entirely. It's not worth it. I can't grow them outside because the magpies and the pigeons eat them. So it's just, I hate growing them. I love growing them when they work.
When they work,
the ones I get, I am so proud of.
Yeah, so you should be. Okay, the second question is posed from my previous guest, which is organic horticulturalist Nicola Hope, who said, which horticultural rules do you break to great success?
Oh, the times of year that I should be sowing things, which is a massively contentious issue.
Isn't it just, yeah.
So I'm a little bit, you know, just yeah. No hate mail, please, guys. But I firmly believe you can grow what you want at whatever time of year. You just need to understand the concept of grow lights. So I grow tomatoes through winter under grow lights. I grow chilies through winter under grow lights. You just need to understand what they do and what heat to supply and things. And, you know, an early start on some propagation does make a difference, but you do need those two extra tools in order to be able to make it work. So that's my real constant, relentless rule breaking is propagating things at the wrong time of year, and I won't stop.
No, don't blame you. Okay, and the third question is, I'd like you to leave a question for my next guest. Now, you're not going to know who that is, but I would like you to leave that question, but then also answer it if you could.
Oh, it's a tough one. My question would be, what is your favourite edible ornamental to grow and why?
What is your favorite edible ornamental to grow and why?
That's a broad question. You know, you've got hostas, you've got roses, you've got all sorts of things that you could be doing. You could be going for the more ornamental versions of vegetables, but what is their favorite beautiful food and
okay, I like that. So that question back at you, what is your favorite beautiful food and why?
Do you know, my favorite is hostas. Hostas are brilliant, and it's when I was at the Gardeners World live show and we had the garden, it was full of hostas. It was the thing that we got the most questions about. It must have been every other person was like, you can't eat hostas. Yes, you can. And I think it blows people's minds, firstly because they are in so many gardens. They're such a kind of garden staple herbaceous plant that people don't realize that they are such a food crop. In Asia, they are eaten basically like asparagus. That's their, you know, probably more commonly than asparagus. It's a real staple and harvested in the same way. So you'd have an established clump of hostas, like you'd need an established clump of asparagus, and you'd take off a number of the spears. And after, you know, a period of harvest, you'd stop and you'd leave the plant to recover. But the benefit, or the multiple benefits, it's a much more attractive plant for the rest of the year. Asparagus ferns are not beautiful, and because they're so straggly and thin, you've got a lot of weeding that constantly needs to be done underneath to maintain the bed. So you've got ground cover with a hosta, so you don't have that, and it's much more attractive. The other benefit is that it doesn't have the same kind of unfortunate after effect that you have when eating asparagus.
Fair enough. So hostas, there we go.
All right. It's time of year, out there with your knife. Once those first little spikes appear, get those. I want everyone eating their hostas.
You can find out more from Lucy by following her on Instagram, where you'll find her as @shegrowsveg. You can also find out more about Lucy's seed company and perhaps get yourself a couple of packets from shegrowsveg.com. Join me again next week, where I'll be in conversation with someone else from the world of plants. Until then, do make sure to rate and review on your podcast platform of choice. You can also see what I'm up to in my garden by following me on Instagram @viewfromthepottingbench and reading my blog @viewfromthepottingbench.com. See you again next week.